Last night was an episode of Biblical Proportions. Alex encounters a patient who might as well be named Job. Izzy wanders alone through the friendship desert, and there's water, water everywhere. We're here with the inside scoop on all that and more in the official Grey's Anatomy podcast. Welcome back to the podcast. Executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers are back with us today to steer us through last night's waterlogged episode, Here Comes the Flood. They'll also prepare us for next week's decidedly drier episode entitled Brave New World, which airs Thursday, October 16th at 9 p.m. on ABC and is available the next day at abc.com. Here now are Shonda and Betsy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Shonda.
I'm Betsy. This is Grey's Anatomy. We're back.
We're back.
Yep. It's
been
a little bit of a break.
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
Because the fine candidates of our fine country have been talking on the fine networks.
Let's pretend like we know what happened.
That would be actually really good.
So I
really
was shocked and stunned.
I was
by
amazed.
The outcome.
Amazed. It was astonishing. We were sitting here watching it and we were appalled and shocked.
What about
and
the part
excited.
That made you cry?
Oh, and what about the part where I stood up and I screamed and raised my fist, yelling?
Mm. The point is, vote.
Vote. We haven't said that yet this time. Vote.
We're going to say it a lot.
Until we all have to vote, we all have to talk about voting, because it's very, very important that we vote. So, we're voting.
You're going to vote. Too. I'm going to vote.
We're going to vote. I want to get one of those little stickers that says I voted, so everyone knows that I voted, and then I stick it on my door. Then anybody comes by, they can see my sticker.
And I like they know to that do that and use it to shame people.
I do. It's the shaming sticker.
Yeah. I don't see a sticker on you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk to you. Or you don't get lunch. Then maybe that's what we could do in the
that's
office.
That's what we'll do.
You didn't vote, you don't get lunch. Can we do that?
I don't think so.
I think that
illegal.
Might be actually against the law.
That might be against federal election.
Okay, so don't go with
regulations.
The lunch plan. That was probably not the best managerial idea.
Abusing workers to force them to vote.
Maybe we give them food if they vote. Maybe we give them something
incentive,
more.
Incentive.
Although that might be considered bribery.
Paying people for their vote.
I think that's wrong, too. Maybe just vote because it's the right thing to do.
Voting's free. Okay. And guys, if you're looking for a girl or another guy, get in the voting line.
Exactly. Pets. You bring your pets to
vote.
Pets
are not in voting lines.
You can't bring your pets on a voting line?
I don't think so.
Oh, God. That's
seeing eye
funny.
Dogs.
Because it's
that's if you have a seeing eye dog.
Oh, that's awesome.
Your
that's
seeing eye dog is someone else's
and
seeing
eye dog could get together and have...
Then you could maybe get together
which would
with
be
somebody.
Awesome. Yeah. Could be good. That'd be, that's a really actually a great kind of combo play.
We care. That's
we
the
do.
Point.
We care about the seeing eye dogs too. Which is
we
awesome.
Should talk about the episode.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I think the name of this episode, unlike a lot of names of our episodes, says something very, very obvious about
it's,
the episode.
It's called Here Comes the Flood.
Which kind of tells
signifies us that maybe there was a flood.
A little bit of water. A little bit of leaking.
A drip.
A little drip,
a dribble.
Little deluge.
Yeah, just a tiny
little
thing.
Kind of deluge. I have to say, one of my favorite scenes in the history of this show is when the ceiling collapses on the
yes.
body cavity.
I pretty much love when the ceiling collapses into the open body cavity, too, because it's pretty good.
It's pretty good, and it's that slow horror movie build.
It's the drip,
the
drip,
drip.
The
drip, drip, and you don't really think anything's
happening. And Bailey yelling, move the patient,
move the
move
patient.
Patient.
And you're
move
not
patient.
Really sure,
yeah.
as an audience member, if you're me and... you're tired. You haven't actually caught up to Bailey's point yet.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of going, what's the deal? It's okay. It's okay. And then the whole ceiling collapses and it's the doctor's reactions and,
yes.
and the best thing that comes out of it, which is that because the ceiling collapsed and
the guy gets to live because they found his pancreatic tumor cancer at stage one and you never find it at stage one,
which is an incredible thing. And which gives Alex
something to sing about,
a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
For
which
a change.
I love.
Because I think...
And he comes home at the end and he says hello to the girl. I feel like that was really important.
Absolutely.
See the girl and say hello. And he comes home at the end and he sees the girl and he says hello.
That was good.
Yeah,
see,
I love
that was
that.
Good. And it's also just that the connection to me between Alex and this poor put-upon patient.
Oh, I love and I love that patient. He's so heartbreaking and just miserable. His whole world just falls apart all the time.
Didn't you guys call him Job?
Yeah, we called him Job for a long time.
He was
yeah.
Job originally because he was the guy on which burden after burden after burden was continually placed. And
yes.
he just took it. He just actually
yes.
absorbed it and took it. And it's just, it's an amazingly, he's a wonderful, wonderful actor. And it's just, it's a funny storyline, but it's also an incredibly upsetting storyline.
He was really funny doing the thing, too. Like, he just, he really went for it. He sort of stayed in character in between takes and he really enjoyed himself. But he really, he was great. He was a wonderful guy.
And it's, yeah, it was a wonderful dynamic to see. And actually, I don't think we've ever really seen a patient like that before. Which
that
is
miserable?
Great.
Not so much. Yeah.
No, it's good. Exactly.
And then we had our pain guy, played by Daniel J. Travante,
who I first, of course, watched on Hill Street Blues. Yes. Who's a phenomenal actor. And we've been trying to hire.
And was amazing. Yeah. We've been trying to hire forever.
Actually, right?
And he was amazing in this role.
He was great. And
just that heartbreaking speech about never, ever, ever feeling pain. And being able to feel the pain of his wife's death because he was in so much pain himself all the time. I found him beautiful and lovely.
Absolutely.
And he was very elegant and lovely and came in to do us a favor.
Well, and it's also weird because it's like these two patients in this episode, both who endure different kinds of pain so elegantly and so gracefully in a strange way.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's that wonderful thing of, first of all, Lexipedia, who comes in incredibly handily this
episode. We were very
episode.
Proud of Lexipedia. We were very proud of that.
She actually very, 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 very smartly remembers something from Georgia studying and comes up with this whole plan that maybe the problem that this patient is having is not as complicated as we think it is.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, an amazing moment and is that great dynamic, too, between Christina and Lexi, which is terrific.
Which I love.
Exactly. And this weird, funny thing which is going on with Dr. Sloan.
Yes, poor Dr. Sloan.
Poor Sloan. Sloan's kind of left in the wilderness.
Yeah,
on that.
I think he might be a little bit confused right now.
He feels that way to me.
Yeah.
He absolutely feels that way to me. I don't think he's got his sure footing.
I think something's coming.
I think maybe it is.
It's possible.
I think maybe down the line, something, a little soup.
A little something's
coming. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Now, I have to say that when Chris Tvernoff came to me and said, I want to write an episode about a flood, I was like, dude, we just had an ice storm. It's going to feel crazy. Like, it's let's not do it.
It's like the plagues. You know, it's like, where's that cattle disease?
But she felt really strongly about it. And we talked a lot about how, a big ice storm could, in fact, lead to a flood, like, scientifically. And B...
scientifically? Engineering?
I generally don't care about the scientific-y part of it. But scientifically, it could really happen. And B, she had really good ideas and thoughts about what the flood could mean. Metaphorically for the hospital, which has now had its ranking fall to number 12 and the chief being put upon. And what really got me was her pitch on the interaction between Bailey and the chief about the flood, how Bailey keeps coming to the chief and saying, don't you think it's time to shut it down? Don't you think it's time to call it? And the chief being absolutely unable to do so until Bailey comes to him to tell him that the ceiling has fallen on a patient in the OR, which I love. And the poor man just being done. Because, as we've said, he is just as competitive as the interns.
He is. And this, I think in the last two episodes in this episode, it comes out incredibly fully how difficult it is to be the boss in this situation and how difficult it is to be the boss when you're still also a surgeon.
Yes.
You know, that all that competition is, he's not an administrator. Strictly, he's really still a surgeon. He still thinks like a surgeon. So there's a battle going on in his brain at
all
the times.
And how much he hates being number 12.
He hates
which it. I think is underneath all of it.
I also really, I love both the fact that it's literally a biblical episode.
There's
a flood. There's Job.
Yeah.
There is a man who experiences total amounts of pain. There are acts of pure generosity.
Yes.
I mean, it's biblical, but also it always seemed to me to be part trois of the first two.
Yes.
It's like, it is connected by the fact that the water keeps dripping. And it's the flip side for the chief, because the chief goes through episodes 1 and 2, you get through 3, and the last act of this guy is this act of pure and lovely generosity, too.
Yes, which I think is lovely.
It's absolutely gorgeous.
That's one of my favorite moments of the script.
Me too.
Is when he says, you know, O'Malley, and he lets him take the test, which is great.
And they're sitting together, and it's that last moment mm-hmm. that always actually really chokes me up, because through all of this, you've seen the chief actually be irritated, angry, irate, impatient, a little bit of a baby.
A little bit of a baby.
A little bit of a baby sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's this weird open act of love and generosity.
He becomes the adult.
The chief again.
Yeah, he becomes the chief.
So it's sort of this transformation for him throughout these three episodes that I just think is phenomenal to watch.
And speaking of biblical, Izzy basically wanders in the desert for 40 years
totally.
In this episode, looking for somebody to live with her, for God's sakes. Just live
She's
with
out
her.
Out on the street in 2 skis and a lunchbox at
yeah,
this point.
Yeah, I thought
got
that was...
going.
I loved the idea that Derek basically... not only just assumes that Meredith's going to move her roommates out, but tells them that they're going to be moved out.
Well, not only that, and then basically bribes Christina into agreeing with him.
Because he knows that Christina is where the money is, really.
Absolutely.
If you want something done, you've got to get Christina, for Meredith, you've got to get Christina to help you.
Absolutely.
So, but I thought that Izzy was sort of terribly heartbreaking, sort of going around trying to get someone to be her roommate.
Well, someone to be her roommate, and then...
And then Christina, who she goes to, and frankly, it is Izzy's fault. She did not say she want to live
She wasn't
with
literal,
me.
But come on, she was just literal. She wasn't literal.
She showed her the apartment, and Christina swoops in and steals it from her.
Which is just the most egregiously horrible thing you could do, but Christina doesn't think it's...
I would do, so I don't like,
You would take your literal pill?
She would tell me, come to me with this flyer, and I'd be like, look, an apartment. And I would move into it. And then I wouldn't understand that what she was saying was, do you want to live with me? I feel like have to be literal. Do you want to live with me?
I think that actually might have to be
spelled out.
That's
the little bit
of
me that's like Christina.
There you go. You know, I think that makes sense. But I also just sort of feel like Christina really, really wants out of that old Burke apartment, because that old Burke apartment's just, woo, that's
full
all
of bad mojo.
And man, it's just gotten worse ever since Burke won the Harper Avery and the whole, like,
and she's gotten her groove back, and she needs a new place. So,
doesn't make
it
any better.
You guys see the new place,
by the way. Oh, the new place.
I kind of want to live there, and I would if there was running water and it wasn't a fake set. I tried it.
You know what? I bet they could get running water.
Just demand running water and a working toilet on a set apartment.
I think so.
And just try to live there.
There are people who do that, right? They have wrenches and they talk to people.
I'm pretty sure Bossy McBossy Rob Korn would have something to say about
Rob
that.
Yeah, Rob Korn, Bossy McBossy.
If I tried
I think
to move
might
in with my
down.
Daughter onto the set, yeah.
I have to say, the thought has occurred to me in the past when I've been in Meredith's house.
Because
I really like Meredith's house.
They have the best places to live.
By the way, their kitchen, just for the record, that set kitchen is like three times the size of my kitchen.
It's three times the size of my kitchen.
And we know I live in a postage stamp, but regardless.
I don't live in a postage stamp.
You don't actually live in a very spacious, lovely
still,
home.
Way better kitchen Meredith Grey has than me.
Also, by the way, like Meredith's Grey bedroom, seen a fair amount of action, we know, so that's not really the point. But Meredith Grey's bedroom, also really, really nice.
Yes. And I like her bathtub.
I love her bathtub.
Oh, that she and Derek have baths, and not the other one.
Not the scary George. Not that one. Yeah, we don't go there. That brings back happy memories of that.
George and his box of fun.
This is like a greatest of sort of hits.
Yes.
Now back to our episode. The other thing that I kind of like look at is George and Lexi right now.
She just
loves him in a sniff hair, soapy smell, I'm just dreaming for you kind of way.
She loves him the way Lexi loves, though. Do you
in
know
that
what I
pure,
mean?
Pure, overeager, Bambi-like.
She's a puppy. Yeah.
I'll kill something for you and bring it to you. It's like a cat, just kind of... But really,
bringing you the dead mouse.
The dead mouse and sitting really, really eagerly, hoping against hope you'll appreciate it.
I mean, the girl stole files for him last year. She's a little bit of a wild card, that girl.
She stole files.
She's a loose
cannon. She didn't just file... She stole pictures from the walls of the hospital, Shonda.
She's right. She stole
she's
from
a kleptomaniac.
She's...
No, she... You know what she is? She just wants things to be nice, and she gets things the way she needs to.
She's a little bit of a loose cannon, is all I'm saying.
She's a tiny
bit
fragile.
I'm warning you people
now.
She's a tiny bit of a loose cannon.
Which I think we're going to find out is incredibly entertaining to watch, and also she's got a lot of depth, this girl.
I love her. I love how she just is all heart, basically. She's all heart.
Absolutely, and the most loyal person ever.
Completely without common sense.
And see, that's absolutely true. And also, I think what's amazing to me is that George is so oblivious. Like, all George is caring about is his test.
George is very focused on his career, because the last time he got caught up in a girl, he failed his exam.
It's true, and the time for that...
He's not even thinking about it right now.
It was a strange reaction, I think, to his dad's passing. So... Yeah, I think that there's a slippery relationship history with George, but I also sort of feel like you would have to be blind, deaf, and dumb not to see this. I mean, the girl is sniffing his hair.
But he doesn't notice her sniffing.
I guess not, but I would still think that, you know, if he had any awareness, with the exception of the test thing, which is a big, big issue for
him. He's a lot like Christina in the other way. Like, if you don't spell it out for George isn't going to notice it.
That's absolutely true.
If you don't spell it out for Christina, she's not going to notice it. Very different people, same problem. Write a paper about it.
Well, look on that. Thank God you're here to clarify that for us, because that would have been
sorry. That was bad.
Totally, totally, totally confusing. That's absolutely the case.
Don't talk about Meredith and her therapy.
I was just about to say, because we haven't actually covered one of my favorite topics.
Meredith breaks up with her therapist, which I love. First of all, I love Wyatt. Amy Madigan's one of my favorites.
Awesome.
But I love that Meredith shows up and is basically like, Derek moved in, I'm healed. Which is crazy, because...
It is.
You know... Kitchen floor, pool of blood.
Yeah, kind of history, long, scary, weird history.
Drowning,
of mom and strange stuff.
Body
and
cavity bomb.
Possibly death wishes and all that kind of stuff. And you know what? Also, therapy usually takes a little while. Because there was always a thing of however long it took to get screwed up, it may take that long to fix. Which, gosh,
I hope
not. Because we'll be gumming our food in our 90s, and but Meredith will still be going to therapy.
I love the optimism involved in sort of saying, I'm done. And I love Meredith's patient, who, you know, is this lovely, lovely girl who is dying and really believes that her cancer is going to be cured, and it's not cured. And Meredith ends up going to Wyatt and saying, like, what is the point of being happy when people are dying and nothing can be solved? What is the point of being happy? And I love that Wyatt says, basically, being happy is not the point. Being able to deal with being unhappy is the point, basically. So, for me, I thought it was a very valuable lesson for Meredith.
I mean, it's an amazing... Because that's the truth, is what's the point?
And then she's able to go home and yell at her boyfriend. Which generally she would be drinking tequila and breaking up with him already.
Well, and she would immediately assume, which she always does, which is if she actually says how she really feels, he'll break up with her. Because the fact is, that was the way she was raised, was every single time she actually showed a real emotion, she got shut down.
Poor Meredith.
I know, right? I mean, this is the thing I'm going to say about Meredith. People say to me occasionally, they say, wow, I don't understand why Meredith just can't get over it. You know, why can't you just get over it? There's this happy, handsome guy with great hair, and what's the issue? And just think about it for a second. Think about what the woman's lived through, and think about the way she was raised, and how amazingly functional she is, and how well she takes care of other people. And I'm always amazed.
Think about what it took for that girl to go stand in that field and build a house of candles.
Oh, don't get me started on that.
For her?
Stop. The candles alone, the hauling that crap out there.
Even the candles.
I mean, going to the store and getting all the candles.
The candles.
Renting the truck for the
candles. I'm surprised her head didn't explode, because it was too much.
It was a lot.
And now she has to live it.
It's a lot.
And Christina's already told her it won't work.
Yeah, and she took it back, but by the way, she didn't really take it back.
She only qualified.
You know it's under there someplace.
Yeah.
But Christina has her own reasons, you know?
Yeah. I love that Christina shows up in that office and says you have to tell her that she can't move in with Derek and it's a big mistake.
I do too, and then what Wyatt says, which is essentially this must be incredibly lonely for you.
Losing Meredith to Derek. And I just love that Christina says, you know, we're just reenacting the show at this point.
We are, because we love this part.
I love that she says you're a terrible shrink, because it's true. As far as Christina is concerned, she's a terrible shrink. And of course, we all know it's the truth.
We all know it's the truth, exactly.
But not from Christina's perspective.
But I also love that what we're continuing here is this whole idea that Christina and Meredith are this key and core relationship.
Meredith and Christina are the love story
of the show.
They have been since the beginning.
And continue to be, because what you don't really get to see TV shows a lot about is the show. The friend.
The show has, for me, always been about best friends.
We totally agree on that. That was the issue.
We've always said that.
Two people who actually, no matter what they do, are loyal to each other and can't be separated.
Boys come and go. Your friends stay around. Should we talk about the next episode?
What's it called?
It's called Brave New World.
Well, okay, so it's not actually literally about a Brave New World this time, so we're okay.
We're not actually growing
creating
a whole
world.
In the hospital.
Just to make sure everybody understands that we're not now going to the literal title school.
No.
Which would be problematic.
There's some interesting stuff that happens in this episode.
Things happen.
Yeah. Things happen that are interesting and amazing.
And amazing. Characters will do things.
Wait till you see what Bailey does.
Oh, it's going to be unbelievable.
Oh,
and
my
also
God.
Meredith and Derek. It's
shocker.
Really, really, really worth watching.
Shocker.
Really, shocker.
Shocker.
Incredibly shocking.
I actually don't think it's shocking.
I don't think
all.
It is either. So, you know,
we're just
we
can't tell you
up
anything.
You
but
know
I think
this.
If
and we
you
do this
watch
every
it,
single week. We just do this thing.
You'll
we,
hear us discuss it later.
And, you know, people say to us, why don't you tease the episode? And then we always end up saying things like exciting and shocking.
I know. It's sad. I really don't know what to tell you.
Except please watch it.
There are patients and there are surgeries.
And it's
and
still
there
at the
love.
Hospital. And I think as of next week, they may still be number 12.
They're still number 12.
Okay, so I think we can count on that the ratings
they probably
not
wear the badge of number 12.
Exactly. I think that's exactly the case. So that kind of wraps it up for us here, and I bet you guys are saying around now, whew.
Thank God.
Thank God, because I have to eat something and go out and vote.
Yes, first you have to eat something, then you have to vote. But not right now, because it's not voting time yet.
It isn't, but you should practice. That's all I'm saying.
Practice and voting. Register and practice.
Absolutely. So this is Betsy.
And this is Shonda.
And this is Grey's Anatomy.
That's it for this week. Join us again next time for more from our favorite executive producers as they break down Brave New World. So tune in on Thursday, October 16th at 9 p.m. on ABC. Thanks for joining us for the official Grey's Anatomy podcast presented by ABC.com. Oh.